Monster Man, Episode 97, Fire Snake to Flail Snail. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the F section of the Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. F means fire, and there's a couple of fire monsters in today's episode, plus a real oddball. Before we get started, though, I'd like to thank Crack-On Games. I just received a little parcel from Crack-On Games. I was talking on the Lead Adventure Forum about the difficulty of finding miniatures for some of the creatures in the Fiend Folio, and Ross over at Crack-On sent me a pack of resin models that he makes. They're of great little sort of alien creatures, and one of them is going to be a fantastic Grell, and others are going to fulfill other roles. They're really cool looking, so if you like miniatures, if you're looking for kind of alien wildlife or fantasy wildlife, you should go ahead and check them out. All right. So the Fire Snake was created by Michael McDonough, and I sort of don't have very much to say about this one. It is a snake, and it lives in fire. Like, you really wanted to have a snake fight, but you're in the middle of a volcano or something, or you're on the elemental plane of fire, and you're like, oh, gee, I just can't have a snake fight because snakes don't live in this environment. Well, I got you covered. Here's a fire snake. Other than that, there's not a huge amount to it. It's just kind of a regular animal plus fire, and that's not an uncommon feature. Like, I mean, you know, I guess elemental version of normal animal is not that uncommon. I think it's basically what the winter wolf is. This is just sort of like that. But, I mean, you can sort of imagine that they would be cool accessories to some kind of evil volcano temple. You know, so they're just kind of slithering around everywhere. And, you know, maybe there's some kind of evil high priest who has some, and he has a bunch of braziers, you know, full of burning coals, but then these snakes are, like, slithering and coiling in them, and they're unharmed. So they could be very atmospheric creatures. Other than that, they're pretty much just snakes. But I guess snakes are atmospheric, too. But it lets you combine two sets of villainous imagery, right? Snaky and fiery into one creature. So that's quite cool. Then we have the Fire Toad. And the Fire Toad is basically just a really big toad, and it can spit fireballs, which I believe was an enemy in the best side-scrolling Garden Life-themed shooter for the Sega Genesis, Insector X. God, I loved that game. Point is, it has a fun mechanical gimmick. It's created by Roger Musson, if I didn't say. It has a fun mechanical gimmick, which is that when it spits a fireball at you, it's not a fireball like the fireball spell. It does damage based on how many hit points the toad has left, right? So it does damage equal to half the number of the toad's remaining hit points. That's pretty cool, although in general, I almost feel like it would be better the other way around if the damage were inversely proportional to the toad's remaining hit points. Because what this means at the moment is that this is a fight that continually de-escalates. As the toad has fewer and fewer hit points remaining, it also does less and less damage, which means it's probably going to get more and more hurt. So this is a fight that is its tensest when it is starting and becomes more and more relaxing as the fight goes on, which is usually not how you want to do it, right? Like, it's not very dramatic. It does mean that it's sort of, now, it has a puzzle aspect, right? You can see how this makes the Fire Toad a creature that is more intimidating than it should be, because you take that first shot from it and you're like, oh, crikey, this thing does a lot of damage. And then you blitz it, and maybe you don't get to find out that as it loses hit points, it, you know, gradually its attacks get weaker and weaker because you pour everything on and, you know, kill it all in one go. You know, a lot of people have theorized that Dungeons & Dragons is, at its heart, a game about resource management, and you can conceptualize the Fire Toad as something which exists to kind of con people into expending resources that they didn't really need to expend. So there's that. But the real prize of this section is the Flail Snail. The Flail Snail was created by Simon Tilbrook. Now, the Flail Snail is one of those you-love-it-or-you-hate-it monsters, right? You can almost divide D&D players into, you know, people who like the Flail Snail and people who don't. Because the Flail Snail is, and there's no way around this, it is ridiculous. It's a giant snail with, it's 8 foot high at the top of its shell. It's got like a pearlescent shell, and then instead of like antennas, instead of a head, it just has like a bunch of flail-like appendages, and as it moves forward, it kind of, you know, sweeps its area with them. Oh, and it's resistant to magic. And if it dies, it retreats into its shell and gradually dies, emitting pitiful cries, which might attract wandering monsters. Oh, poor old flail snail, pitiful cries. Because I think the idea is that flail snails aren't hostile. They're just kind of trying to sweep their way clear, right? They bash everything in front of them out of the way with their flails, and then they just kind of sluggishly, or snailishly, I guess, move through. Now, me, I'm on the side that thinks the flail snail is great. It's goofy, but it definitely has that gonzo charm, and it's interesting in that it combines, like, a fantastic grotesquerie and the sort of elements of the absurd pathetic. So, like, once you have killed the flail snail, it has this magic resistance ability, and the magic resistance comes from the prismatic, like, pearlescent sheen of its shell. It lasts for D6 months after the flail snail dies, and of course there's plenty of market for magic resistant shell, I guess. You could line your study with it to prevent getting scryed on. You could store your magical items in there. I don't know. But the image of a bunch of scoundrels trying to manhandle an 8-foot high, 250-pound tie-dye snail shell out of a cavern, that definitely falls within the, like, pathetic aesthetic. Like, this thing is worth a lot, assuming we can get it back to civilization and sell it, which means that for the rest of this adventure, we're going to be walking around carrying a gigantic snail shell. So the flail snail is great, and it's another one of those creatures that tells you something about the implied setting of this game, right? Like, if we're in the kind of world where flail snails are just creeping about, then we're definitely in some kind of bizarro fantasy world, not, you know, medieval England plus or minus some orcs. Plus, I guess. It would be plus. We're living in a world that is much more bizarre and grotesque than that image. And that appeals to me. It doesn't appeal to some people. And so I can see why the flail snail has become kind of the touchstone of... Well, actually, maybe it's one of the Fiendfolio touchstone monsters. Like, people look at it and they think that's ridiculous. But there are a lot of things that I, you know, that by any reasonable definition, are ridiculous that they happily accept, you know, so. It just seems to kind of have this reputation as the goofy monster par excellence. Indeed, in our next episode, we'll demonstrate that there may be some sillier monsters than the flail snail. I don't know. Silly it may be, but I'm quite attached to it, and I think it actually does have a lot of uses, particularly if it's emitting its pitiful cries, poor old snaily. It definitely seems like something that would be in some kind of wizard zoo, or that would have one as a pet. You know, it would be pulling some lunatic's chariot, rather than just kind of like, oh, well, yeah, when we entered this hex, we rolled on the random encounter table and we got a flail snail. That's probably less satisfying. But anyway, overall, I am pro-flail snail. I understand that there are some people that aren't, but on balance, I'm for them. All right, that's about all the time we have for this episode. In our next episode, we're going to be talking about the Flind, the Flumph, the Forlaren, and maybe the Frostman on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.